The good life is one inspired by love and guided by knowledge. You'll find both love and knowledge here on The Misdiagnosed Life. Here is your host, Beverly Butler.
How to be resilient when life sucks. You know, sometimes when we go through difficult times in our lives, we just want to throw our hands up and give up. And learning to be resilient is not easy. Well, I have with me today a lady, your name is Allison Graham, and she's an expert at teaching people how to be resilient when life sucks. And it's something that she's experienced herself, and she's gone through a lot of difficult times in her life, so she knows what she's talking about, and I'm really excited about the show today. But before we get into that, I want to tell you a little bit about what I've been doing. And I have learned firsthand myself how to be resilient. I've had a lot of practice with that through the years. Many of you know I've had my child has been chronically sick for over 15 years. But now we've gotten her well, and I'm really excited about it. And this is the work that I've been doing. I announced before Christmas that I was going to take a hiatus, take a break, and I was going to be doing some pretty intense work, and I would come back after the first of the year and tell you what I'd been doing and what I learned. And so I waited a little bit later than I'd planned, but I thought this would be a good time to just go ahead and tell you. Now, the work is still ongoing, and this is a special type of past life regression therapy, and it's some of the hardest work I've ever done, but it's absolutely the most important work I've ever done. And what it basically does is it clears the karma from your soul. And in the process, it's also clearing up the negative energies. And these energies, I talk about energy a good bit on this show. Energies, negative energies are associated with sickness and all kind of, health issues and mental, emotional issues, all the whole thing. Negative energies are associated with that. And good energies, high vibration good energies, are associated with wellness. And it's really basically that simple. It's actually a little more complicated, but that kind of simplifies it. And when you clear up the negative energies or the karma from deep within your soul, then those negative energies turn to positive energies, alchemizes to positive energies, and it filters all the way down to the physical. We are just physical manifestations of our soul. And this has been one of the most important things I've learned, that, you know, there's a lot of things that can be going on in your soul and you have no idea on the physical plane, the conscious plane, of what, you know, of what that is that's going on in your soul that is causing a lot of these problems in your life. And this is what has gotten my daughter well. We've spent a lot of money over several years doing various things to try to get her well. And I'm not saying this is the only thing you do. It's not. There's never just one thing. You still need to eat right and exercise. And you still, if you're really sick, you still need to be under the care of a doctor. You know, and sometimes there may be medications that you may still need, at least for a while. But of course, you always work with your doctor on that. But the point is, this work gets to the root cause of every problem that a person could have. And that's one of the most important things that I've learned. And I've seen things and gone through things firsthand that's just absolutely been mind-blowing. But what I've had to do, this was such intense work that you have to do away with the distractions as best as possible. So I've had to do some things that has been, you know, some of these things have been pretty difficult for me to do. But I've had to kind of isolate myself and, you know, get my mind in a place where I can focus and concentrate and do this work. And you can't do this work if your mind is, you know, going 50,000 miles an hour like mine has been so much of my life. But my mind has kind of calmed down a good bit, and I've learned so much with this. And as I've said, this is what has actually gotten my daughter well. She is blossoming in every way. She's back in college. She's making really good grades and is loving every minute of it. And she has grown in so many different ways. It's not just a physical. She's on no medication now, not even taking supplements. And she's just doing fantastic. So I cannot say enough about this work. And if you're interested in this work or learning more about it, and I'm going to be doing some more work in this field, and if you're interested in it, just email me at beverly@themisdiagnosedlife.com. And I'm also really excited about the show today and talking with Allison Graham. She is an author and a speaker, and she's got a lot of really interesting things to say. Allison Graham, she's my guest today, and I want to tell you a little bit about her book. She has a book that's called Married My Mom, Birthed a Dog, How to Be Resilient When Life Sucks. Now, Allison, welcome to the show, and I've got to ask you about the title of this book.
Oh, thanks for having me, Beverly. And yes, it is a fun. Good news is I did not literally marry my mother. So
I was going to ask. I'm going to say, please tell me you didn't marry your mom.
No, not at all. But I did go through what I call my decade of hell. And it was just a time in my life when everything that could have gone wrong seemed to have gone wrong. Several important people in my life died suddenly. I had surgery that was botched and caused some neuropathic pain, along with 5 surgeries to try to fix that, hundreds of doctor's appointments. And then I had 8 major breaks, and physical breaks.
Oh, wow.
And so ultimately, when the doctors said to me, Allison, you're going to have to reevaluate your expectations for your life because you're not physically and emotionally able to run a company successfully. And there were a lot of limitations at that point in my life, which I've now dealt with. And I said, no, I'm not going to allow that to happen. I'm not going to go on disability or insurance. And so I called my mom, and God bless her, she said yes when I asked her. I said, you know, Mom, I know you have this great late life going on, and, you know, you've recovered from dad dying and, you know, at least getting on from the grieving widow and, you know, all your friends and your little routine as a retiree. And what if you were to, like, give all that up and just come and hang out with me? And by the way, you can be my chauffeur and drive me to my client gigs.
That was because driving, if I understand your story a little bit, your driving caused you pain. You were in pain a lot of the time, weren't you?
All the time, actually. Wow. And so, yes, driving intensifies it. Anything that really has me sort of bending the pelvis can be really difficult.
Well, that rules out, that takes care of a lot of things.
Unfortunately,
you know, sitting, yes. Just a lot of things. Wow.
Exactly. But, you know, and here's the thing, the blessing that came out of it is, you know, that I have a wonderful relationship now with my mom.
Yeah.
And not that we didn't have a good relationship before. We did. I was growing up very, very close to my father, who I consider the beginning of the decade of hell is when we lost him to a long battle with cancer. He had brain tumors and lung cancer. And that was really, I didn't have the tools to heal.
Yeah.
And when you don't heal, then, and you know, you have to go through the typical motions and the expectation of grief, of course. And then you need to be able to kind of put that in a box and not have it influence everything else in your life. And for me, I didn't heal well enough to kind of see my life in a way without my best friend and sounding board for 30 years. And then all these other things started to happen, and I didn't have the tools originally to be resilient, which is what was the impetus for the Resiliency Ninja work that I'm now doing to help other people who are going through hard times and facing a lot of obstacles in their own life to still be able to succeed and operate from a place of joy. Even though there are bad days, they don't need to determine your level of success. You can still succeed professionally. You can still be joyful, even when the worst things in your life are happening.
Yeah. And of course, this is what prompted you to write your book. Now, in your book, you talk about your story, right? And the things that you've gone through. And do you give, like, solutions for people? Because you've become, and we'll talk about your website here too, the resiliencyninja.com is a website that I want everyone, that would be really good for you to go to and check it out, because she has learned to be resilient for a lot of things in life. And but you, in your book, what do you talk about in your book? Solutions?
Absolutely. I was really clear when I set out to write this book that the book, as much as it was the backdrop, is my story. What really matters is the formula for how to become a resiliency ninja. And when I was going through the worst times, the doctors would say, well, you just have to be resilient. You're going to bounce back. And they would say these things like, time heals all wounds. And I was like, Well, actually, no, it doesn't, because the physical pain, time makes it easier to deal with the suckage, but the pain is not going away. And so there was so much cliched advice for how do you be resilient. And the other thing was there was a lot of victim mentality in the healthcare system, by no fault of anybody's own, right? It just is the way it's set up, that as a chronic pain patient, you were now destined for a life of disability and insurance and all of that, which I wasn't willing to accept as fact.
No, I was just going to ask, did they put you on a lot of, were you on a lot of pain medication? Because, you know, some people get addicted to that stuff, and that's just a whole other show itself, I guess. But were you on a lot of pain medication too to help with it?
Everything from ketamine infusions to methadone to hydromorphone was what I took for about two and a half years. People don't recognize that methadone was originally actually a pain medication. So while it is known widely as being an addiction remedy, it actually originally was a pain medication. And so one of the good fortunes with this is I actually am very sensitive to medication, and I do not like the feeling of being intoxicated, high, whatever phrase you'd like to use with it. Like, I don't like the pain medication. I never got addicted to it.
Oh,
and
that's good.
Yes, I'm very, very blessed that that was not something that I had to include in my story, although I do have friends who've had chronic nerve pain who became very addictive, and they needed the numbing out of it. I was really, you know, it took a lot of effort. Now, I say I wasn't addicted from a perspective, but the truth is I had to wean off the medication. You couldn't just stop the medication.
Right.
You still, your body does build up a tolerance to it, and then you have to figure out how to get it out of your system. And I have been medication free for about a year and a half. We might be at 2 years now, which is not quite 2 years for sure, because it was before I wrote the book I was off the medication, and that was a big it's funny, I wanted to rewrite the book for several years, because the joke, Married My Mom, Birthed the Dog, started back in 2009, right, when Mom moved to London and to live with me. And yet I wanted to be sure I was far enough along in my journey. I had a financial number I wanted to hit in my business of speaking and consulting and coaching. And I hit that. I actually blew through that number.
So now you did this, you accomplished that goal while you were in pain and all, correct? I mean, while you were dealing with
all
of this.
Absolutely. Okay. I was published by a huge publishing house, Wiley, John Wiley and Sons, while I was in pain. I worked with some of my country, I live in Canada, most of our banks and financial institutions at the national level, I was working with them even while I was in pain. And the interesting, and accounting firms that are international, I was so fortunate to have had a strong network. And when I started my business, and before the surgery happened, I actually had a business teaching people how to network. And thankful I did, because I was able to rely on that network to still grow very easily the sales efforts. And I charged a lot. And what would happen is I would go in and I would speak, and then my mom would be in the parking lot waiting for me. And as soon as I was out of the parking lot, I would just crash.
Wow. That took a lot. I mean, that took a lot of what you would say, just a lot of guts to do that, and a lot of determination. So you have definitely earned the title Resilient Ninja. I mean, you're the Resilient Ninja expert. So what is a Resilient Ninja? I mean, if you had to just really describe that.
It is someone who is operating from joy and has unlimited professional success no matter what challenges blow at. So you operate from a position of strength, confidence. It does not mean you don't have bad days. It does not mean you don't have triggers that can set you off. It doesn't mean that you don't have pain. It means that you can take that information, not catastrophize it, not exaggerate it in your mind, not dramatize it, and you can process and get back to neutral faster. So for example, I was talking with a professional, and we were talking through her resiliency strategy, and she said, you know, I really feel like I'm very resilient and I'm successful and even keeled, and I can handle my emotions and everything's great. until my ex-husband texts me.
Uh-oh.
And then I have this pit of anger that comes up, and then I take it out on the kids. I take it out on, you know, my virtual team. And a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
You know, we have something that we're really upset about, and then it influences how we operate and communicate with others. And maybe it triggers depression. Maybe we end up on the couch. We numb out, step into victim. And so when we were seeing that, and she's like, I just want to get away from the trigger so that when he texts me, I don't respond in a negative way. Mm-hmm. And I said, truthfully, that's unrealistic. Because that'll take some healing and a long-term solution, and we need to get there. Except today, what we need to figure out is how do you come back from that trigger, recognize the trigger faster, mm-hmm. and then have the self-awareness, the emotional strength, the mental strength, and the resourcefulness to not allow it to influence the rest of your day. Mm-hmm. That's what we need to do.
Yeah.
That's what a resiliency ninja does. We can't make the reality of the bad stuff in our life disappear. We can just learn how to be stronger while we deal with it.
Yeah, and that's something that I'm glad you mentioned, these triggers. Before you can handle and be a resilient ninja, you've got to know what your triggers are and realize those. What are some of the other triggers that people can have sometimes that just sets them off?
There can be a million different things. For me, one of the challenges, now that I'm more able-bodied, I'm driving myself, I live a fairly independent life again, even though I have my mom with me, which is great, but she has some health challenges. Mm-hmm. And I noticed when we take her into the hospital, she's got not a great heart, hasn't for her most of her life. And we'd go in, and then all of a sudden, I would be in a fine mood. We'd take her into emergency, and all of a sudden, I'd snap at the parking attendant, like, what do you mean? I'm 1 minute over. How is that $2 more? Like,
yeah.
You know, like silly things like that. And it just felt so out of character. And I had to step back and go, why am I doing that? And I recognized that I was so fearful. And fear generally will show up as anger when we don't deal with that emotion. And so for me, I was so fearful of losing mom and numb to it. Like I was afraid to even process the fact that mom was that sick. Mm-hmm. And so when I recognized that, I was able to put it into perspective. And then like a resiliency ninja, and as I left, I would make a point to reset and remind myself, anybody who I interact with from here on out is not related to my pain. My being rude, my being angry is not going to help me and my healing and my fear or anything like that. So let's really be grounded and thoughtful and kind to the people around us because they don't need to suffer just because I am feeling X.
Well, what was the turning point? I mean, you're obviously better, you're feeling better, and things are going better now, at least health-wise, and I think they're going fantastic business-wise too. But what was really the turning point in your life when things really started changing for the better and your health got better and, you know, you kind of got on the other side of the obstacles?
The worst. Okay. So from, I would say 2015, I had a talk with the universe, whatever
yeah.
that means.
Yeah.
And I said, listen, I'm going to be kinder to my body. I am going to take notice of the signs and signals and be more thoughtful about how I live my life. If you would please just stop, like, you know, when you're begging with God, right?
Yeah, like, right. Please.
Please
yeah.
stop making accidents happen around me because I can't take any more physical pain. And so I tease a little bit about that. But even looking back, because what happened with those 8 injuries is only one of them was my fault. Everything else was somebody running into me and putting me in a tree, like whatever the case may be. And so I was attracting it to my life. But what I recognized so significantly was, and you know the phrase, of course, Beverly, love your neighbor as you love thyself.
Right.
And the truth is, if I would have loved my neighbor like I did myself, they would have moved.
Yeah.
Because I yeah. was horrible to myself.
Yeah.
I said, and have you noticed this? Women and men as well. I shouldn't just say women, men and women will have an inner voice. And I call it the internal messenger of BS. And it will ruminate and it'll make up stories and it adds the worry. And mm-hmm. But the funny thing is, and we'll say the worst things to ourselves, but we believe it.
Right. We do.
When we say it to ourselves, we believe And it's not accurate information. So my pattern was I would push too hard. My pain would intensify. I didn't have the tools to deal with the pain. I'd end up on the couch having to recover. And I would start saying things like, "You're so lazy. Why are you doing this? You don't deserve to sit here on this couch. You have to get up and do something. You're useless in society. You are like," I mean, the phrases I use to myself are disgusting when I look at it now.
Yeah, that's true for a lot of us. Probably everybody, really true, or most everybody. You know, we say some of the worst things to ourselves we would never say to somebody else.
Oh my gosh, never. And if we don't catch ourselves, so for me, I started to write it out. Mm-hmm. And look at it objectively. And then when I was out of my moment of anger, fear, hurt, when I was saying those things, if I started to have a conversation with myself in my head, I made a point of grabbing a pen and paper and writing it out. And then once you do that, you can look at it objectively. And when it's on paper, it's a lot, it's real. And you can say, wow, that is not accurate information.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a great idea, writing it out. That's powerful.
It is. And for so many years, I was beating myself up. And yet, on the outside, you would think I was confident and happy and joyful and all of those things. And I was being a real meanie to myself. And people don't see that. And I know that they're there who are hurting and who are saying these horrible things to themselves. And it's just like, I look at it objectively. Your friends would never say that to you because they don't. They don't believe it. And here's the worst thing. If you're with a significant other of a man who's saying that kind of stuff to you, that you should not be, need to get out because it is not healthy. And I had those men. I had the con men before the surgery. I had the verbally aggressive men who said horrible things to me. Yeah. And even with my weight, I mean, I look back then and it was such a thin, size 8, 5, 9. And, I had a boyfriend who would say, Alison, do you really need that food? Don't you skip a meal? Oh. And no wonder I was looking in the mirror and saying, oh, you're so fat, you're so fat, you're so fat. And then, lo and behold, here I am at, a bit further down in my life, I've gained some weight. And you know what? At this point, I love myself anyway.
Yeah, well, loving ourselves is key to, that's a foundation for having a good life for anybody. I mean, for everybody is loving ourselves. That's critical. Well, we're going to have to take a break right now, and we will be right back. I'm talking to Alison Graham, and she's the Resilient Ninja, and she has her website, resiliencyninja.com, and we'll be right back, and we'll talk more about how to be a Resiliency Ninja.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, and we're back. And I'm Beverly Butler, and you're listening to the Misdiagnosed Life Podcast and Talk Radio. And I'm talking to Alison Graham. She's a speaker and author of the book, Married My Mom Birthed a Dog, How to Be Resilient When Life Sucks. And we were talking about some things, some lessons that she learned in her life, some things she's gone through, and all that is kind of culminated into the book and into her website, which was, you can go to resiliencyninja.com, and she also has another website that's the same one, but it's easier to spell. It's r-ninja.com. And so we'll start using that address. It's a little bit easier. So, now, she's the resiliency expert. She's been through a lot of tough things in her life. She's had several health challenges. She's had several losses in her life. So she knows what she's talking about. She's been there and done that, as they say. So, Alison, what is, for people out there are many people out there that are going through some really tough times right now. And they just want to, sometimes we just want to throw our hands up and give up and just walk away. And sometimes that's where stubbornness can come in, into, you know, you can say, well, I'm not giving up. And I know there are people out there that's not giving up, but they need a little help. So what is the Resiliency Ninja formula that you've come up with through your life experiences?
Well, I think the reason I came up with this formula, the way I came up with it, is I wanted to give something that anybody could apply to themselves and their circumstance. So I don't want to say that when somebody dies, you need to spend, you know, 4 days in bed and, you know, prescriptive. I wanted to give you something that you could say, okay, what's going on here? So the first step is your self-awareness, getting really clear. And I'll go through the formula and then I want to go deeper into each one if we have time for that,
sure.
Beverly, please.
Sure.
So your self-awareness, so you know exactly what you're dealing with. What are you, how are you responding? What do you need to do? And what will serve you at that moment? So that's step number one. The second piece is around your strength. So really building the tools and the muscles to be strong, both in terms of your mental capacity, your physical capacity, and your heart. So what does your heart need and how are you responding? What's your emotion? How do you deal with that emotional roller coaster? And that's the strength. So that's the second part of the formula. The third part of the formula is your resourcefulness. And finding ways and workarounds around the obstacles that you face in your life. And so we sometimes get stuck in that mode of this is how I've always done it, or we can't really see, we kind of get defensive to this is how it is and we can't see through that and find other more effective opportunities. And so that's our resourcefulness. So I'll give you an example of resourcefulness for me. When the doctor who said you need to reevaluate your expectations for your life, and I had a my first reaction, by the way, in that moment was not, you know, no way, I'm a resiliency ninja. My reaction in that moment was, you know, bawling my eyes out and really having a sorry for me pity party and crying and like, are you sure this is it? And then by the end of that time, that appointment, and so wonderful, this doctor spent a lot of time with me on this in that particular meeting. And he, by the end of it, I was like, I'm going to figure this out. I am not going to allow this surgery, this botched surgery and this pain to define my life. And so I left there and I really put on my business consultant hat. And I said, okay, let's look at, if I can't change the pain, which I couldn't change, what can I do around the pain that is within my control? And so recognizing that the travel, the 2.5 hours back and forth in the car was too much, it was exhausting, like I could make it, and then I was just in so much pain when I got there, it was harder to serve my clients. Yeah. So that was where an example of resourcefulness was looking at that and saying, okay, I need somebody else to drive me. I can lay back in the car, I can have a nap, I can focus on getting into my best self for that client. I could do everything that I needed to do without the stress of being on the highway and driving. Mm-hmm. So my mom became a resourceful tool. And not everybody has a mom they can call. I understand that. And sometimes people are afraid to ask for help. That's the other thing. I was a very independent, strong woman. And I needed to ask for help.
Yeah, there's a lot of us out there that's like that. And that's just something, I guess, we just have to, you know, when you need help, you just have to get over that.
You do.
And look at the bigger picture.
Yes. And I think what's really helped me in that area is I would ask help for a specific thing. So when it's very specific. So, hi, you know, I am not feeling well enough tonight. I need dinner for my family. You know, hey, can we, and maybe one of the, if that's a challenge for you, feeding your family, I know that I've got some friends who have a sort of a potluck system where I don't know what they call it, but they, you know, there are six of them in the group and they all make one meal enough for the week to deliver to everybody. And they do sort of a food exchange each week. So you're only making one meal, but you're getting healthy, delicious meals all week long.
Oh, that's a good idea. That's a really good idea.
Isn't that fantastic?
Yes.
See? So how obstacle where, of course, you're, you know, perhaps your listeners are thinking, I don't have time to cook healthy meals. Mm-hmm. Well, what could we do to get you cooking one healthy meal a week to do something like that?
Yeah, just start somewhere.
Right.
And do a little bit. And, you know, talk about the thing with the neighbors. It's a good way to get to know your neighbors better, your friends better too, to do that. I think that's just a really good idea.
Yeah.
And there's all kind of ideas like that. There's just digging down and coming up with these resources, you know,
That's right.
resourcefulness.
So the way I walk through audiences, actually, I just, you know, did another keynote. It's one of my favorite things to do. Coaching and mentoring business, like small business owners, solopreneurs who are trying to get going, and then speaking at a conference in an audience and sharing these insights. And so the one that we spend the most time on in my main keynote is the continuum of challenges. And so when I came out with the Resiliency Ninja framework, the very first keynote I was going to give, I decided, you know, I'd love to go back to that time when everything was going wrong, right? The pain was severe. I'd finished the fifth surgery. I'd had all the people dying. I'd moved. I'd, you know, changed the, like, it was just so much going on. I was depressed. And you know, financially, I was strained at that point because I just didn't know how to keep the company going at the same level that I was used to. And I did what they call a stress test. And Beverly, have you ever done a stress test or heard of a stress test before?
Probably I have in the medical field, but probably not what you're about to
Yeah.
say.
So what it is that there are a whole bunch of things that could be stressful in your life. And they are allotted a number. So if somebody dies, you might get, you know, 34 points of
Yes,
on the
now I
stress
have done
scale.
that. I do believe I have done that before.
Yes. And so I thought for interest's sake, I'll go online and I'll do one of these stress tests. So I found one and I added up everything that was going on at the time, and my score was 734. And you might say, what does that mean?
I take it that's not good.
No, the legend said if you have a score over 330, seek professional help immediately.
Oh my.
So
Then your
that's
stress
how.
really went up, didn't
That's right. And so I was looking back at that, and what irked me most about it is that we bucket in our society everything under the umbrella of stress.
Yeah.
So something's going wrong and it's stress. And actually, if you look at the adjectives and the definitions of stress, not everything is stress. In actual fact, we have stress, we have obstacles, and we have adversity. And stress is, in my definition, is internally driven. It is an emotional state, and it is fixable. And people are
Right.
like, no, I don't believe you. I live in a stress state, and I'm like, nope, because I've seen it happen. We take a look at the stress, and instead of looking at it from stress, we figure out what are the obstacles that are causing you stress that you can't emotionally deal with it. So then we boil it down to obstacles. Now, here's the great thing about obstacles. Obstacles are either internally driven or externally driven, doesn't matter, but they are movable. They are fixable. They are overcomable. They are the things within the box of control. We can get creative and we can find a way to get around it, get over it, blow it up, get it out of our way, give it to somebody else, whatever. Obstacles are where I love to play, because when we can boil our stress and our adversity into obstacles, you're in control. Then we go to adversity. Now, adversity is when a catastrophic external force forever changes the way you see your life. If we were going on a walk through the woods, and it started to rain and pour, and you couldn't get your, you know, 5 kilometer run in that you were planning on doing, and you had to go back home, and you were really upset and annoyed by that, that would be considered stress. You had this expectation, it didn't work, that's, you know, and you're all worked up about it and emotional, that's stress. An obstacle, we're going down this path, we're on our 5K, and oh, by the way, you're in America, so that would be miles. You're 5 miles. We use kilometers
Yeah,
here,
you're
sorry.
in Canada, right? You're in
I
Canada.
am, I just realized that's probably not a good metric. Anyhow, so you're going along, you have this goal, and all of a sudden the path is blocked by a tree that has fallen in the path. You don't turn around and go back home and go, oh my goodness, throw your hands up and say, I can't keep going. No, you think, okay, there's a log or a tree stump and I've got to get over it. So I'm going to step over, Or maybe you go to the side of the path and jot around if it's too high, or, you know, if it's really small, you might just pick it up and throw it out of the way. That's an obstacle. An adversity. We're walking down the path, doing our nice little, you know, light jog, and all of a sudden there's an earthquake. And in front of us is a sinkhole. And there's a big, all of a sudden the path no longer exists. That's an adversity.
That's a big adversity. Yeah. And, right. And everybody classifies all of those as stress.
Oh, yeah. My goodness. Right. Or they classify the obstacles as an adversity.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. Now give us an example of like someone like a mom at home in a day-to-day life. I mean, I know that was a good example. Just give it, you know, like an overall view of it. But in a day-to-day life, how would the average person, what would they go through that would actually might be, instead of an obstacle, might be an adversity or a stressful thing?
Okay, great question. So let's look at a divorce.
That's the
adversity may be that you've got a divorce. Now, for some people, they joke that's actually a good thing. But, you know, let's just say it's an adversity. It's never changing. You're never going back to the routine that you used to have. You have healing, whether it's a positive thing that you're out of this marriage or it's not. At the end of the day, the path that you were walking on, the expectation you had for your life has significantly changed.
Right.
You've had a divorce.
Right.
You've got two kids or three kids, and now you don't have an extra set of hands in the morning. The reaction to that can be very stressful. Yelling at the kids, busy, 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 hurry, hurry up. Somebody spilled the milk. We don't have time for spilled milk. You're skipping breakfast. You're not taking care of yourself. You're not grabbing. All of that is stress. So there's an emotional tie to these crazy mornings, and you get into the office and, oh my God, I'm so busy and I don't know how to do it. And the kids were late for school and now I'm late for this meeting and I've spilled coffee on my... You can just see how that plays out.
Right, right.
That's stress.
Yeah.
When in actual fact, the obstacle that is within your control is, what is our morning routine? What time do we need to get up? What can we do the night before that is going to set up our mornings for success? How can I not react? Like, if you're yelling at kids, and I have friends who have talked to about this, and of course, with my little doggy, you know, I don't yell at him because he's like, oh my goodness, we're going to the office. Let's go. I can understand and respect, and even remembering when my childhood, you know, we had very stressed out mornings. Mm-hmm. And I look back to that and I think, okay, well, we've got to get to bed earlier so that we can get up 15 minutes earlier to give ourselves a wiggle room. I can pack my lunch the night before, or at least plan what I'm going to have for lunches the night before, and then maybe I make it in the morning because I like the fresh food. I can, you know, cut up all the veggies and do all of that prep work in advance on Sunday afternoon, so I have really healthy choices to take with me. There are just so many things that can solve that morning struggle and obstacle, of course.
Yeah, and so many people don't take the time to do that. And I mean, I'm guilty too. I'm the world's worst. You just keep plowing through and you just, you know, and you hope it'll get better maybe, but that's just phenomenal. And it's just common sense. You know, what you just said, you know, just back away and, be aware of the problem, number one. And oftentimes people are just so busy, like I said, you know, they don't take time to just step back and look at that and say, now, how can I make this better? And I think that says something about, we're all just too busy. And I think that I think the first thing would be good, and this is just me speaking here, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that people need to do is just step back and say, is there something in my life I can do without that can help me to not be quite as busy? Because we're missing the best part of our lives by just being wrapped up in la-la land here, just being so busy with everything. And I think we're forgetting to live.
I agree with you 100%. And in the my book, I have a chapter on, like, lose the word busy.
Yeah.
Like, stop saying we're busy. Like, it's really interesting when you look at the continuum of challenges as a society, we wear busy as a badge of honor.
I know, we do. And that's not necessarily the case. I mean, it can be.
It's not.
It's really not. That's right.
No. Why would we want to go through our lives with this badge of honor of busy, 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 because when we're busy, we don't enjoy. We're not operating from an authentic self. We're often serving everybody else's needs. We're not looking at whose needs do I really truly want to serve and from what perspective and in what way.
Yeah. And it's like it makes us feel, it's like it makes us feel important or something if we're busy or something, or maybe our self-worth. I mean, I don't know. I'm not a psychologist. 100%. I'm not a psychologist. I don't know, but we're way too busy and we need to slow down, because I mean, we're all rapidly heading to retirement and to those ages, you know, where we're going to look around and like, you know, there's not much life left. And, you know, that's one thing that I don't want to do, and I'm going to do this enough as it is, we all do, but I just want to minimize, this is something I want to do, is minimize my regrets. And yes. If we just rush through life, you know, like we're a fireball, then we're missing so much of life, and I just don't want to look back. And again, I've got too many regrets already, but I want to minimize them. Let's live. Let's slow down and live and enjoy life. And yes, there's always time to be busy, but we don't want to miss, you know, smelling the roses while we go through this life here on this planet as we speed through space. And with that note, we're going to take another break. This is Beverly Butler. You're listening to the Misdiagnosed Life podcast and talk radio, and we will be right back.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
Let the silent voices be heard. It's the rallying call that started it all. AmericaOutLoud.com. For a wide spectrum of programming, from world and political news, societal and cultural stories, law enforcement, our military heroes, and much more. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Okay, we're back. This is Beverly Butler, and I'm talking with Allison Graham. And she's the author of the book, Married My Mom, Birthed a Dog, How to Be Resilient When Life Sucks. And we're talking about three things: stress, obstacles, and adversity. And Allison, you were telling us about some, you know, giving us some examples of this. And what about this adversity? Because I want to say a little bit, you know, talk a little bit more about that. What are some things that, you know, advice you want to give when people are like facing adversities?
Sure. So it's really interesting. So just as we dramatize busyness and stress and, you know, gosh, imagine if you, somebody would say, how are you really busy? And you said, no, actually I'm not. I'm fully in control of my schedule and living quite a joyful life.
They'd probably faint and fall out if somebody said that, because nobody says that, you know,
except for me, because that's what I say. Oh, you're so busy, aren't you, Allison? Because they see me on social media and everything. And I'm like, actually, no, I'm not. I'm perfectly in control of my schedule.
Well, there
I'm
you
living
go.
A very joyful life.
There you go.
And, you know, of course, I'm the resiliency ninja, so I can say that and have a good cute laugh and all mm-hmm. of that. But here's where I find it so fascinating. We wear our stress and we exaggerate it, and we're so proud of that. And when we suffer an adversity and somebody asks you, how are you, what do we say?
I'm fine.
I'm fine.
And we're
so
not.
We diminish the very things that are the most catastrophic in our life, and we exaggerate all the noise and the busyness and all the stuff that is fully just internally driven. So because I think the noise, we don't know how to process the feelings on the adversity side.
Yeah.
And the challenge with that, sorry, go ahead.
Well, that's what I think that is one of the root problems of this whole thing, is we don't know how to process these feelings. We feel so many different things, and some of these feelings are bad feelings, and we don't know how to process them, and so we just get busy to try to dull the feelings. And I think that's one reason that we're so busy, that too many people are busy. Now, I'm slowing down. You know, I'm finally getting it, but I'm getting some in with what I mentioned in this show, at the beginning of the show, that I am doing some work and been doing some work down here in Central Florida where I'm at, and it's causing me to feel things. So it's causing me to feel things I really don't want to feel. So I'm well aware that we hide a lot of feelings, and some of these feelings I didn't even realize were there, but they're bubbling to the top, and it's not real fun going through it, but it's necessary to heal. So go ahead there. I interrupted.
Well, think about how we learn to deal with our feelings. Okay. So let's imagine you're on the playground, or, you know, you're outside and you skin your knee.
Yeah.
And so now you have a feeling of physical pain, and your mom comes along being the sweetheart that she is, and she kisses you a little boo-boo and she makes it go away. And you, as a child, say, "Oh, yes, mommy, you're right." And in the mind, you've got to be thinking, it still hurts.
Right.
Right?
Right.
And then you go to school and you get bullied on the playground, and you come home, and what's the advice we get? Let it go. Mm-hmm. They're just jealous. It's not, it doesn't matter. And you're like, okay, mommy, daddy, guardian, grandma, whoever's giving you this advice, teacher, principal. And you're saying, okay. And then you try to let it go. But the problem is, it's still there.
Yeah, you haven't processed it.
Yes, because we don't deal with it, it lingers. And then it shows up physically, or it shows up wherever it is in our life. And we carry these things.
Yeah.
And then something tragic happens. You know, maybe you have a sexual assault. Maybe you, you know, lose one of your best friends. Maybe somebody dies. Maybe something. And I remember even when I was younger, very tragically, I lost one of my dearest friends. And nobody knew what to do to process it, right? Like, it was such a great neighborhood, and everybody was numb. And I didn't know. And I remember, that's the first time I remember going numb to an emotion.
Yeah.
Because I didn't know what to do, but I didn't know the implications of that long term.
Yeah.
And
it can adversely affect your health big time. Suppressing feelings, suppressing emotions is so detrimental to your health.
Exactly. And nobody is doing it. We're diminishing it. And I think you're absolutely right on. We get busy so we can numb the pain and not deal with the stuff that matters.
Yeah. And, you know, this reminds me of something. I was talking to someone a few years ago, you know, and, you know, the difference between boys and girls. And girls, let me just say it this way. When boys, young boys, when they, you know, they're playing or whatever, if they get mad at each other, they just fight it out. They just get down and wrestle and fight. And when it's over, they get their feelings out. They're friends again, and they go back to playing or whatever. But now girls are totally different. Girls are so much more complicated to me now. Now, I've just had a girl, so I can't say completely this way, but it just seems to me like girls are so much harder to raise than boys. When young girls get mad at each other, they pout. They sulk, and then they get into cliques, and they talk about it, and then they fume over it for days or weeks, and then they're not friends and all like that. And I'm like, you know, I think it'd just be best if they just fought it out too and just got it over with and then got on with life. But see, that's just an example of when you process feelings and just get it out, then you can put it behind and go on. But if you don't, it's just going to sit there and eat at you and eat at you and eat at you, and that is so bad for your health.
I agree. And one of the things that I talk about a lot in the book is the emotional roller coaster. And how do you deal with that? And how do you accept that in order to have true joy and happiness, you need to be able to feel the opposite level of emotion? And
that's
I
true.
Really believe it's a pendulum, right? So however far you can swing on the worst side, you can swing back to the positive side.
Absolutely.
And if you aren't allowing yourself, or, you know, and that's what I used to do. I used to live in the numbness. And there were a few years where I feel like I just kind of floated through life and I didn't embrace anything. Yeah. And so I would sort of get a little like happy in the moment and hanging out. But I was as soon as I started to feel something, I would literally physically clam up and feel me suppressing that horrible emotion that I couldn't process. And then it would impact how much joy I could bring in. And now, like, when emotions are just feelings and energy that go through us, and if That's we right. don't allow that flow, it all gets caught up
and stuck and stuck does. In our bodies, and there then we have problems, you know, whether they're physical, emotional, mental, wherever. It just really depends, I think, a lot on where the energy gets stuck, you know. Yes. Where maybe our genetic weaknesses are. And I'm glad you mentioned about the range of emotions. You know, we, you know, sometimes people say, well, I just wish life was good all the time. I don't think you really do, because if life was just good all the time, then you couldn't, that would get boring. And I know people might say, well, no, it wouldn't. Yes, you think about it a minute. You know, if your football team wins all the time, then it gets to where it doesn't mean as much. And it's like, oh, it's almost kind of boring, because it's just, so you need, we need the range. We need the yin and yang and the good and the bad and all like that. But that's because that's part of the balance in life. You don't appreciate being really happy till you've been in the depths of despair and been really sad. Then you can appreciate. So it's feeling the range of emotions that causes us to appreciate things and to appreciate life. And to me, that's when you really live. It's when you can appreciate and experience and feel the range of emotions. And too many of us don't do that. And I myself have been guilty too. You know, I'm having to learn myself to feel these emotions.
And to healthily process them. You know, without the bad,
correct.
You don't have a reference point to realize you have the good.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's right.
And
and you, when we need that reference point, because, you know, that's just part of life. And that's how you can feel, you know, it's like, you just don't know how good feels till you experience how the bad feels.
Exactly. And, you know, something that was very freeing for me was, I used to have this expectation that I needed to be happy every day. Yeah. And if I wasn't happy, I was wrong. So there was a judgment that came from not being happy. Mm-hmm. And I read the book called The Happiness Trap. And it said, you know, society has created this expectation that happiness is neutral. And in actual fact, happiness is an emotion on the side of the scale, and neutral is neutral. And that was so pivotal for me, because I stopped chasing happiness. Yeah. And people say, oh, you want, you know, resiliency ninja, that it's joy. Like, I'm just exuding, you know, I'm in elation mode. Joy as a confidence that is how you operate. It's a level of optimism and being able, a realism, and seeing what's going on and coming from a place of love and joy to solve those problems, as opposed to living in elation, you know, which is a bit of a distinction. But when I let go of the expectation that I needed to be happy every day, mm-hmm. then it became, my neutral is operating from a state of joy, and I can have anger, and I can have all those other emotions that I can feel from a very confident perspective, that I will get back to neutral.
Right. And they're just emotions. It's just energy. Just feel it and let it move through your body and, you know, process it. And go on, because there's a range of emotions that we're going to be feeling if we allow ourselves. But that's part of life. And that's what makes life so interesting, really. And it's what makes life life.
It is. And I know we don't have time to really dive into dealing with chronic pain and the physical pain. But I would just say that one of the reasons I am able to live a full life despite having neuropathic pain is because I stopped fighting it. Uh-huh. And I recognized that it is just a sensation that my brain is interpreting. And I stopped catastrophizing. Nope.
Yeah, I think you got
the word I'm looking for.
Yeah.
The pain, and lost the story around it. And now, like, even last night, I was at a conference
And I love to dance, Beverly. Beverly, I'm dancing, put on some music and bring it on. That's my happy place.
There you go.
And I'd already presented, you know, did a workshop that day. And here I was now dancing. And about an hour and a half in, I kind of hit my wall. And I was like, oh, yeah, there it is. And it just hit to 10 on the pain scale. Mm-hmm. And instead of doing what I would have done several years ago, which was, oh my God, I gotta go to my hotel. I gotta lie down. I don't know how to walk home, you know, back to the hotel. I don't know. Like, and I would get all this energy around that. I was like, oh, there you are, grumpy Smurf. I've named my my pain. And I'm like, oh, darling. Yeah, I guess we've come out to play. And it sounds ridiculous. But the brain, I can calm down the sensation and the interpretation of the brain. I've made friends with it.
Yeah.
And just like emotions are passing sensation, our brain interpreting pain is a warning sign. And for me, it's because my nerves internally were damaged in such a way that they're not going back to the way they used to be. Mm-hmm. And so it's just always firing, going da 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 da, you know, like, ah. And I'm just like, yeah, I get it. You're firing and you're in hyper mode and I love you anyway.
Yeah. And it, you stop being a victim. I mean, you stop giving into it and you've just, and I know we could probably talk half the show on that.
Oh yeah.
And we are almost out of time, but you just look at your pain a whole and interact with it really in a whole different way. And
yes.
That's really a smart thing to do. Well, what message, we're almost out of time. What message would you want to leave with people? Now you work with people, in business, and there may be some other ways you work with them, but what would you want to leave with people that many people out there are going through tough times right now? And other than, you know, they need to go to your site, r-ninja.com, and get your book, Married My Mom, Birthed a Dog, How to Be Resilient When Life Sucks. And they can do those things, and that'll be very helpful to them. But what message would you personally want to tell people today?
That if they're going through a time and feeling overwhelmed, please know you have a choice. You can choose to go the victim route and give up and throw your hands up and just say, this is my lot in life, and numb out, or, you know, get really busy and lived in a stress mode. Or you can choose to find the tools that are going to work for you and your circumstance, because there are ways, you know, you may not be able to make it the way you really want it, but you can absolutely make it joyful and you can be successful. And so that's what I say to people. You have a choice when challenges happen to either become a victim or to become a resiliency ninja.
Okay. Well, thank you, Allison. I appreciate this and appreciate your book. And be sure to visit her website, r-ninja.com, and also get her book, Married My Mom, Birthed a Dog, How to Be Resilient When Life Sucks. This is Beverly Butler, and you've been listening to the Misdiagnosed Life podcast and talk radio on the America Hour.